I invite you to join me in the spirit of prayer. Spirit of life-giving love and love-giving life, on this, the threshold of the holiday season, we come to be aware of the connections that hold us in the web of life. We come to be aware of all the many blessings that are ours, and to recognize that even as we struggle, there are those who struggle in a much harder battle sometimes than the ones that we are a part of, that sometimes those battles are lost, and we remember those who have lost their lives to such demons. We remember those around the world who are in the midst of war and social upheaval, those who sit in peace and are sprayed by pepper spray. We remember sun shining on blue skies and crisp mornings, and we know that the world is a mixture of both pain and beauty. Let us be filled by the beauty so that we might face the pain and help others to face theirs. Let us hold this moment together in quiet. Amen.
Today we have an ancient and a medieval reading. Our first reading is an implicit explanation on gratitude found in the 9th chapter of Tao Te Ching by the ancient Chinese philosopher Lao Tzu and translated by Peter Merrill. Fill a cup to its brim and it is easily spilled. Temper a sword to its hardest, and it is easily broken. Amass the greatest treasure, and it is easily stolen. Claim credit and honor, and you easily fall. Retire once your purpose is achieved. This is natural. Our second reading is a more explicit account of gratitude found in the poem The Guest House by 13th century Sufi mystic and poet Rumi, and translated by Coleman Barks. This being human is a guest house. Every morning a new arrival, a joy, a depression, a meanness, some momentary awareness comes as an unexpected visitor. Welcome and entertain them all. Even if they are a crowd of sorrows who violently sweep your house empty of its furniture, still treat each guest honorably. He may be clearing you out for some new delight. The dark thought, the shame, the malice, meet them at the door laughing and invite them in. Be grateful for whatever comes, because each has been sent as a guide from beyond.
So there's an old Buddhist story that I'd like to begin my message with this morning. It's one that might be familiar to some of you. It seems that in ancient China there once lived an old farmer who had worked his fields for years and years, and he was considered to be a very wealthy man because he had a horse to help him with his plowing. And one early spring morning, his horse ran off. And when the villagers heard this, they hurried to his home to express their sympathy to him. And what a terrible thing, they said, they lamented. But all the farmer said was, maybe. And the next morning, his horse returned, followed by a herd of mustangs. The townspeople rushed over, exclaiming at his good fortune, "Now you are the richest man in the entire province." But all the farmer said was, maybe. And the following morning, the farmer's only son began to break in one of these wild horses, and it promptly threw him off its back and across the barnyard. And sure enough, the farmer's son's leg was broken. And once again, the townspeople rushed over in alarm. What a terrible thing, they wept. Without the help of your only son, how can you possibly plant your fields this year? But all the farmer said was, maybe. And the next morning, a horde of soldiers rode into town, kicking up an enormous cloud of dust, and they'd come to conscript all the young men of the province into the emperor's army for a war. But the farmer's son couldn't go because, well, he had a broken leg. The townspeople once again gathered around to marvel at the farmer's good fortune, but all he said was, maybe. And the story, it says, goes on and continues this way for several more verses. So a customary Buddhist interpretation of the story is that it illustrates the important principles of balance and non-attachment and of one's relationship to faith. It teaches that the experiences that appear to be either good or bad can never be judged in isolation, that life is a paradox in which all things are relative and interrelated. They are interdependent of one another. And I have to agree with all of that, but there's one more piece that I would like to add that I take from the Rumi poem. Be grateful for whatever comes, because each has been sent as a guide from beyond. Rumi implores us to be aware, to be grateful, and to respond accordingly. Now, some of us may quibble with the phrase, a guide from beyond, but I don't think that we need to. We could use many names to identify that energy and that essence that defies definition, let alone naming. Call it a guide from beyond or from within. Call it God or not God. Call it nature or human nature or the spirit of life. Call it the great harmony or the great mystery. Call it what you will. I think it really doesn't matter what we call it or how we think of that larger interdependent whole of which we are a part. What matters is that we are paying attention to this gift, which is our life in the first place, and then to all those experiences that provide the narratives which become the stories of our lives, which engender the meaning and the value in our lives. Putting such ideas into words always makes them sound so simple, right? Like a number one song that the Essex sang back in the 1960s. Any trivia people? Easier said than done. Just the way that Lao Tzu says in the Tao Te Ching, that the Tao, the way that can be spoken, isn't the Tao at all. That would be far too easy. Try telling someone who has just lost their job that what they are facing is a golden opportunity. Try telling someone who is going through the difficulties of a divorce or separation that when one door closes, another one opens. Try telling someone who has just been given a diagnosis, which might even include a fatal prognosis, that this is just another freaking growth opportunity. Or try telling someone who has just lost a loved one that if they'll only allow it, that their grief will pass and that they will be stronger in time as a result of the experience. I don't really suggest that any of us use any of these responses when we're with those who are struggling with these or any other difficult issues. It would be so insensitively trite to be so flippant in the face of another person's very real pain. The newly unemployed are afraid of losing everything that they've worked for. The newly divorced don't know how they're going to relearn who they are without that other person from that primary relationship that's been lost, whether that was a positive relationship or not. Those with terminal illness struggle to imagine a world, especially the world of their loved ones, without themselves in it. And many of those who have lost a loved one pray that they might ever find a way to stop their hearts from breaking and begin moving on a journey towards some kind of wholeness and healing. It would be excruciatingly insensitive to be so trite and so flippant in the face of another person's very real pain. Those adages are not things that we need to hear from one another. But the truth is, they are exactly what life calls us to do. When we find ourselves in difficulties, either great or small, we are called to find our way through to the other side of those difficulties. And that journey to the other side really is a leg of that larger journey, which is our life. And all of those smaller pieces within that larger journey are precious elements of that larger whole. And it is awesome. And doesn't that call us to find our way in gratitude? The kinds of experiences I've just described about unemployment and separation, illness and death or death of a loved one have been and are being lived out now by many, if not most of us, who are in this sanctuary at this moment. These are kinds of challenges and so many more that are at the core of the very heartaches that many of you have brought to me and to one another in order to share and to talk about. The awareness we share is that these are all among the many experiences that provide the narratives that are continuously becoming the stories of our lives. These are our unexpected, though unsparingly predictable, visitors. Our lives are indeed rounded by loss and with pain. I'm not saying that there aren't many, many reasons for us to be joyful and that we have many wonderful experiences in our lives as well. They are infinite too, but we don't need to work so hard at accepting those, do we? We need each other to share them with, but we don't have to work so hard to accept them. We can acknowledge that it's good to share the joyful things with others, and we need one another for that. But still, being grateful for that hard stuff, there's the rub. Being grateful for the hard stuff is a whole lot more difficult to accomplish. Even if they are a crowd of sorrows, Rumi writes, even if they are a crowd of sorrows who violently sweep your house empty of its furniture, still treat each guest honorably. That really is the challenge of a lifetime, to be grateful for all of it. We don't get to pick and choose the pieces we want to include in our life stories. All too often those things choose us. Stuff happens, and it will happen. Our part is to respond. In formulating our reply to life's experiences, what we choose is who we are and what we are becoming. We author our life narratives, not by the events, but by our responses to them. We might each ask ourselves, given my circumstances, who do I want to be? Do I want to be small and cowering and vengeful in a constant state of disappointment? Or do I want to do something else? Something that might provide more meaning. George Bernard Shaw aspired to being a force of nature instead of a feverish little clod of ailments and grievances, complaining that the world will not devote itself to making him happy. That's not to say that grief is less than an essential response to any difficult passage. Grief is real and it has to be expressed. It is to say that a spiritual maturity calls on us to be faithful to a vision of life that is larger than our hurts and our losses. Since those will always be a part of our story, we can either be consumed by them or we can choose something that might have more value and more meaning to us. It is to say that a spiritual maturity calls us to be faithful to a vision of life that holds open hope and faith in the opportunities for growing our souls, and opportunities for doing the loving and the healing thing, for opportunities for participating in hopeful prospects of transformation and wholeness. And so as we approach Thanksgiving in the beginning of the holiday season, we find ourselves in a truly chaotic world of war and social turmoil, and for so many of us, of personal challenge. These are our guests this time around. Let us each seek to welcome them and at least try to be grateful for them and for the lessons and for the opportunities that they bring. And so may we each in our own way practice whatever discipline promotes our aspirations for a faithful and a hopeful and a loving life. May we strive to grow our souls so that whatever may come, we don't lose sight of that paradox in which all things are relative and interrelated. All things are a part of the interdependence of all that is, so that whatever may come, we might pause to notice and to greet those guests with the thought, "This is my life. Thank goodness for that." And so may we each know more fully and deeply the blessings of our hearts this season, the rich inward turning of winter, the spring's lush renewal, the verdant steady growth of summer and autumn's rich harvest of blessing upon blessing. And may our hearts lead our voices and actions in an ongoing expression of awe, of gratitude, and of service. May the songs of our lips and the prayers of our hearts shared in this hour of worship be with us now and in our days to come. As we extinguish our chalice, this worship comes to an end and our service begins. Blessed be, happy Thanksgiving, and amen.